So we come on now, Deborah, to the issue of how we actually explain this theory to young children in particular. And your theme is get them young, explain when they're still quite young. What is the single biggest misunderstanding of Darwinism?
Well, so, I mean, what you find is that even though natural selection is this beautiful explanatory principle that gets you so far in explaining aspects of the natural world, that it's actually one of the most profoundly misunderstood. And this 30 years of research basically indicating that even the people who are teaching it don't often understand it. And the one
and
of
yet
the
it's so simple. Why don't they understand it?
Well, so what we have is sort of very early arising biases to focus on individuals and on their purposes. And so as a result, when we think about why species, why populations change, we think about individuals changing. They change in response to need. And so why do animals have the specific adaptations that they have? Why do they have the specialised body parts?
Because they were needed trying. Them. So you're straight into Lamarck.
You were trying, or evolution as something akin to a designer designed it into you. You know, it's helping you get what you need in order to survive. And so what you're focused on is in the individual, whereas, you know, natural selection is a population-based mechanism. What's happening is you have populations in which there's variability. Some animals are, in environmental contexts, better able to survive and reproduce and pass on their genes than others. And so you see proportional takeovers or proportional increase in their traits over time. And that's basically what how the Pelosas evolved skinny noses
demonstrates. We have to come to the Pelosas. You're quite right. Pelosas, to explain to people who haven't got the book in front of them, it's a children's book that you have been involved in creating. And Pelosas are somewhere between kind of rats and elephants, like tiny little elephants with rat-like.
Somewhere between an aardvark and a clanger.
An aardvark and a clanger, all right.
And so what we, yes, the Pelosas are fictional creatures, extremely realistic. We've designed a book using development principles from developmental psychology for teaching children from about 5 years of age through 8 years of age about natural selection. And it's part of a project that's basically creating a sequence of books to teach evolution in elementary school.
Tell us what happens to the Pelosas.
Oh, so what happens to the Pelosas is you've got a population of animals who mostly got wider trunks. So we're teaching about adaptation in this book. They've got mostly wider trunks, and then they have catastrophic climate change. And whereas their food was all over the ground to begin with,
millibugs.
The millibugs move underground into deep underground tunnels, and suddenly the members of the population that have wider trunks find themselves at a disadvantage. Only the ones with the skinniest trunks and the skinnier trunks can reach down into the deep underground tunnels to get to the millibugs, and therefore they stay healthy
and reproduce. And you don't dodge the, as it were, the slightly tough aspect of natural selection, which is those who don't have the right shaped trunks die.
They do. Well, what you see is we make the causal connection between the fact that if you don't have food, you grow unhealthy. If you grow unhealthy, you don't have energy to have babies. And if you don't, you know, and eventually, if you're unhealthy enough, you do actually die. And you just see the Pelosas who've got the wider trunks and widest trunks becoming either reproducing less or over time just looking increasingly poorly. And so it's not, you know, in your face, but they're definitely dying off. And
you can tell what's happening.
Well, you can tell what's happening. And importantly, what's being laid out page by page is the sort of increase in the traits, increase in skinnier trunks, you know, changing this population over time. And, of course, it's a foundational principle that also will then, as we sort of move through the series, we'll be able to extrapolate and show how this leads to new species.
Deborah, you're sitting next to the most ferociously well-educated Darwinist in the country. I'm going to ask Richard Dawkins, therefore, whether he thinks this book works well.
It's a lovely book. I do have one misgiving, which I think is probably met by the fact that it's one of a series. As you said, Andrew, natural selection is a very, very simple idea. And in a way, it's too simple. It's so simple that people think, oh, well, I understand that. What they don't understand is how you can get from a fish to a human. I mean, natural selection in one generation, one the sort of thing that the Pelosas do, not one generation, but just one natural selection change, one leap. Everybody gets that. Creationists get that. They understand that perfectly well. What they don't get is that if you take a whole lot of changes like that, end to end, one after another, a cascade of them, then you get evolutionary change, which can be as big as from fish to human. That's the big barrier. Yeah. And so in a way, I fear that a book like this, if it's not accompanied by other books, will leave people saying, oh, is that all?
So I think it's actually to start with that, is that all? And then show how if you actually
show this thing over time, you need another book that takes it out.
So here's the... Did you get on to really tough stuff later in the series, like Peacock's Tales and Sexual Selection and why extravagant and apparently... Over-the-top developments appear in nature.
People get very troubled by you teaching about sexual selection to five-year-olds. So I'm not
sure...
Well,
why?
Sex in general is something that most people don't want you necessarily teaching.
Bring it on, come on.
So at this point, really, we are focusing not so much on sexual selection. But, you know, certainly down the line, when we're heading down the line, the idea is to prepare children over time to understanding these concepts. We're countering all these other intuitions, the purpose intuition, the design intuition, that are actually very present from very early on, 5, 6 years of age. We're starting early because we know that by about 7 to 8 years of age, children have already got these other kinds of explanations for why animals have the properties that they do. And so if we don't start early, those beliefs are going to get entrenched. And it's one of the reasons why natural selection is not being understood, is because we're not starting early enough.
And so there will be people in this country who say this is propaganda, and you'll say absolutely right.
No, it's absolutely wrong. As Richard points out, adaptation within a species is completely uncontroversial. It's the case that you can be the most conservative religious person and you will accept it. But what you really have to do is understand it. And that's what the book's about. The books are about leading to understanding and seeing how this powerful mechanism operating within a species can now lead to a new species emerging.
Well, I'm still looking forward to how the Pelosi's evolved multicoloured iridescent tails.
Yeah, well...
later in the series. Alex?
I think that it's a great idea, and I think this idea that we can present children as young as five with these quite deep ideas, I mean, I'm almost surprised that it hasn't been done before.
Well, I think what you find is people skip over natural selection. They always give a very, very short explanation of it. And what the book does is it lays out page by page how it actually works, so you can visualise it. And, of course, we've done a lot of research with this book, actually showing it, sure enough, you know, over extended periods, children only understand it. They're applying it on into new cases, which is profound, since we're generally leaving teaching this principle in any depth till about 13 to 18 years of age in the United States. It's much too late.
Kathy?
One of the things I find fascinating about the book was the sort of sequence of climate change and then behavioral change by the millibugs, right? And then the physical adaptation by their predators. And I'd never really, I mean, and I'm not an evolutionist. I mean, I've never really thought about how maybe those things are categories that are stupid to define because they're all happening at once.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, but you're seeing the knock-on effects in a sort of significant ways, how the system works and fits together. And actually, we asked children at one point to talk about what would happen to the millibugs over time, and they were very, very...
Oh, good, yeah.
As it happens, the most thorough study of natural selection in the field is that of Peter and Rosemary Grant in Galapagos, and it's precisely what you're talking about, Kathy. A great big climatic change came along, a drought, and that within 1 year favoured finches with thicker, fatter beaks, with stronger beaks, because the seeds changed to
drier and thicker.
Yes, and then the following year there was a flood, and exactly the opposite happened. So it is a climate change caused this immediate massive shift in the population balance between finches of different beaks. You could have actually used finches rather than Pelosi's.
No, so one of the reasons why this is a question that comes up, why did we not use a real animal, a real case? And because, you know, this is the kind of work that hasn't actually been done before, we had to start with a case where children wouldn't bring preconceptions about these animals, so they would be learning in some sense, being able to just reason through what's happening on the page without necessarily bringing their own intuitions about what might happen. They think birds fly off to solve their problems.
Now, I have the great good fortune of being surrounded in this table by people who understand science better than I do. But I'm really interested, just as we finish, in the question of how we get better education in schools for science, because certainly in this country, everything is divided into this rigid three-part system. It's biology, it's physics, it's chemistry, as if these are entirely different disciplines which don't interconnect. And yet all the good new popular science writing mixes them up. And, as I say, sets adult minds on fire. How can we get a better education for kids in schools?
Can I just add, actually, even within those disciplines, the way it's being taught is piecemeal. So what you've got is a series of facts that are being taught and they're not being connected up. The dots are not being connected. And I think that, you know,
I was taught the ruddy periodic table without really understanding why I was meant to learn
it. No explanations.
Yeah.
So what we need is explanations.
Yeah, for that matter, I mean, the way I learned mathematics myself was pure thought, right? Mm. At any time, if somebody was trying to shove a sort of trigonometry formula down my throat, I derived it from first principles.
But and Kathy, that's if I may say so, you're slightly odd. You are staring at car number plates and making mathematical games out of them as a young girl.
I love prime numbers, that's true. But I do think that, you know, to the extent that people need trigonometry, which is not much, we should teach them the basic principles and show them at least, with some help, how you get those formulas rather than memorizing formulas, which doesn't help anyone.
You want to encourage a curiosity about the world, and the way you do that isn't by saying there are all these subjects and they're all totally ring-fenced. And another one of my projects is a kid's book, slightly older, between 8 and 12, called Football School, and it's essentially Hogwarts for football, and every lesson is about football. So what you're doing there is you're appealing to kids who don't read, aren't interested in studying because it's not what they want to find out about. But in the physics lesson, we learn about how you play football on Mars. So we learn about gravity, we learn about air resistance. In zoology, we learn about real life animal mascots, you know, Kyler the eagle at Crystal Palace, like what's interesting about eagles. We learn about probability in the maths lesson, but the probability of something happening during a game of football. And I think that you can give children you know, these big ideas that they will like and understand, and once they start to realise that everything cross-connects, that's when they get excited about learning.
Richard.
Hackles are rising.
Well, you know, you're a great user of clear, vivid and witty prose. Is there any chance at all that you'd write a book for 10-year-olds?
I've written a book for 12-year-olds called The Magic of Reality. If you just take the biology itself, evolution doesn't come into biology until the end of the textbook. It should be at the beginning. It doesn't make any sense at the end. Mm-hmm. And I can't help feeling the reason for this is it's thought to be controversial. Yeah. It shouldn't be controversial. And the reason it's controversial is quite simply religion. And I think that's what pushes it to the end of the textbook. Biology doesn't make any sense until you hit evolution. It's just baffling, like your periodic table. Mm. What's it all about?
But again, chemistry and biology completely interleave. I mean, unless you understand a little bit about the chemistry of the brain and the electricity of the brain, you can't possibly understand anything about the brain, really.
No, that's right.
Indeed. I'm wondering whether you think, Deborah, that children of age, say, 6, 7, can actually understand something like evolution. Is it possible to educate people in that way?
I think it is. I mean, I actually believe, we've shown it. So the research that we've done actually has shown that certainly with respect to understanding adaptation.
And does it stick?
Oh, we can say that it sticks for at least about 3 months, 3 to 4 months. Enough for you to come in and do and work in again and now let's elaborate this principle. And the idea here should really be that there is a kind of staircase structure that's taking place, a progression where we start out with a principle and then we build it, we elaborate it, rather than it all being piecemeal, different pieces of facts. Oh, look, fossils. But OK, we're not connecting that back to a natural selection and why animals have the properties that they do. Fossils and contemporary animals look similar. We're not going to explain that. So children are introduced to ideas. They're not given ways or, you know, scaffolding in building explanations about those things using broad explanatory principles that get them very, very far indeed. And we could be starting much, much earlier.